Okay, we're going to call the meeting to order this evening. We will start with a moment of silence and then a pledge of allegiance to the flag behind me. If you can stand, please. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, so welcome to our committee meeting. We'll roll right into, at this time, were there any citizens that wish to address the board this evening? We have one. You would come and to the microphone, state your name, where you reside. Great.
Chuck True, Rural Township, and thank you, President Deuter, board administrator, for giving me a few minutes. It's going to snow. And every time I think about it snowing, I think about Dr. Hollerstrup at 4 o'clock in the morning.
I'm not sure he's being serious or mean-spirited.
I just know I'm not up at 4. So anyways, today I was coming home, and I was behind an elementary school bus. And I was sitting there, and the kids were getting off. You know, it made me think of two things. First of all, it made me think of how much I enjoyed my boys in elementary school and how much I missed them at that age. But they blessed me with 4 grandchildren, so that's, you know, that's okay. The second thing I thought about was how important what you do is, and the administrator and the teachers. You know, just, it's so important with the kids at that age and as they grow up. You know, sometimes their examples aren't doing well. Even if they have good examples at home, they're with the teachers so many hours during the day. And while you guys give the school district great direction, you know, I really think of the teachers who are dealing with that all day long. And, you know, it's different than when we go to school. You know, all the challenges what the kids have and all that. So I know I've talked to some of your school board members over the last couple of years, and maybe it's a little embarrassing. Many school board meetings, people come and thank you for what you're doing, but I sincerely say thank you for what you're doing. It's very appreciated. This past weekend, my wife and I went to see a movie called The War Room. I hope if you haven't seen it, you will. It's a very impactful movie, and it talks mostly, am I standing too close? It talks mostly about prayer. If you've seen it, you know what it's about. The power of prayer, and the importance of prayer. And I think sometimes we take that for granted. The Lord is real, and he makes a difference. He can affect things. And in this movie, the key characters had a room they went in to pray by themselves, not distracted from the world, and it was called their war room. And I got to thinking, wouldn't it be nice if we had a room in each of our school buildings? We could call our war room, where kids or teachers, a minute or two when they have time between classes or sometime their schedule could go get alone, and that would just be their time to spend some time in prayer. Maybe I'll just throw that out there. I know it's challenging. We live in a country we got laws that says you have to do this even though we all know it's wrong. You can't do that although we all know it's right. So maybe that'd be difficult in public school, but I'll just throw that out there. And outside of that, I would like to take time to pray for the board administrators. Dear Lord, we thank you for this evening. We thank you that we have the freedom to come here. We thank you that we live in a country where every child has the opportunity to go to school, to go to a good public school, no cost to them. And we just pray for our board members as they give direction to our administrators, and as for our administrators as they give direction to our teachers. We especially pray for our teachers when they deal with different situations every day. They never quite know what's going to come through their door, what type of evening their child had the night before at their home. We pray for the kids, Lord. Many of our children come from good, solid homes, but there are some that when they go home, it's a struggle. They don't come from a very safe environment, and it's hard to be in our community with us, so it is. Lord, we pray right now that you would reach out and take care of them. Show us how we can take care of them, too. One of our states. I thank you now, Lord, for the safety we have in this country. Thank you for blessing us for being able to live in the United States of America, the greatest place on earth. We just pray that you be with us. discussion in this meeting. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you. Thanks for your years of service on the board, too. All right, we have a action item here that we need to take, and that's to approve a personnel report. Hopefully everyone has gotten a chance to look over that. Were there any comments or anything on that at this point? Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
John. Second. Any other discussion? Oh, Brian. All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no? Personnel report is approved for this evening. We'll move into the Property and Services Committee then, Mr. Ramsey.
All right, thank you. We have one action item for our board meeting this month. It's to approve the local audit report for the year ended June 30th, 2015. The audit itself's been done for a while. It's just been difficult to try to coordinate schedules here with our meetings and Carl's meetings with other districts and clients, and it's hard to get him here. So he's here finally. Everybody should have in front of them the actual audit report as well as the PowerPoint that Carl will go over. I've also attached it to the agenda item for the members of the public. Again, this year we had a great audit. We're very fortunate to have Carl Hogan from the firm of BVD do our audit. He's very knowledgeable, very concise, very detail-oriented. And I know every time he leaves, we're better than when he came. So that's helped us a lot. So I'll turn it over to Carl, and we can go through the report.
Thanks. I'm going to do a real quick synopsis of the audit report for 14-15. I know you're working on 16-17 halfway through this year. But that being said, too, I could sit here and talk for as long as you want to about all 60 pages. So that's up to you. You know, we'll start with this, and then if anybody has any questions after, I'm sure you all thoroughly read the audit report, I'll be more than happy to talk about it. Obviously, the most important part of the audit report is your independent auditor's report. This is what you're striving for in terms of the results. It keeps on getting longer and longer as we get more and more standards set in place. But on pages 1 and 2, here's a summary of all the different paragraphs in your audit report. And obviously, the most important one is the board section, which is your opinion audit, or your opinion. And basically, in the fourth paragraph, it states that you received an unmodified audit report, or basically the numbers presented to us by management were fairly presented for the year ended June 30th, 2015. The next slide that we have here, this is just the summary of your year-end results, which is on page 46. There's no surprise here in terms of the results of operations. I know what Keith had reported to you, being spit out right here. This is just summarized. So for the year ended 14-15, you had budgeted a zero-based budget, revenues equal expenditures, no change in fund balance. Your actual revenues came in at approximately $50 million for a positive variance of $1.9 million, which is within 3-4%. On the next slide, I explain what this positive variance is related to. Mostly it's related to earned income, delinquent, and transfer taxes. I received in excess of what was budgeted. And then on the next slide, I also explain this is kind of an indicator of improvement in your local economy that these revenues are picking up. Also in the revenue section 2, you received more than anticipated revenues related to the special education classes that you provide to other school districts within your own school district. As you come down below, your budget expenditures, 48.1. Actual expenditures came in 49.5 for a negative variance of $1.3 million, but also realize that negative variance of $1.3 million includes $1.5 million, note at the bottom, $1.5 million transfer that was appropriated at year end based upon that favorable variance in revenues. So before that transfer was done, you actually had a positive variance of about $200,000. But that transfer was made in need of, in light of, future capital improvement plans that you have scheduled to come without having to incur any future long-term debt. So your actual revenues, 49.9, actual expenditures, 49.45, positive change in your fund balance of $500,000, beginning fund balance, $8.8 million, fund balance ending, $9.3 million. Any questions? Like I said, pretty much in line with what Mr. Ramsey was reporting to you throughout the year. This is just memorializing the results for 14-15. Next page here, like I discussed at the top, actual local source revenues were $1.8 million more than budgeted based upon better than anticipated real estate delinquent transfer taxes received in excess of budget. And then at the bottom down there, we have a summary of your fund balance at June 30th, 2015, based upon the results. So you had $9.3 million of fund balance. $4 million is committed for employee retirement contributions. $1.7 million committed for technology initiatives. Now this is the increase of $500,000 was added to this number based upon needs of the district for technology. And then you had unassigned amounts of $3.5 million or 7% of your $50 million budget for 15-16, which is within the PDE guidelines of 8%. And then there was just another highlight for you. During the year, you had a current year debt refunding. You issued series of 14A and 15, and it's reducing your future debt service payments by $600,000. So that's the biggest other highlight that happened for the year. Now, I'm not going to try to get too technical here, but there was a new GASB that was issued in the current year, and I know I've discussed this and you've probably heard this before. Your financial statements are dual reporting accounting. You have a basis of accounting that you do your annual budget on, the modified accrual basis of accounting, but then about 10-15 years ago, GASB put in full accrual statements, and you have your non-current assets, your non-current liabilities, and you keep on building on this and trying to make this level of detail you're reporting that will kind of look like a business. In the current year, they added on to these full accrual statements to add you have to book a liability for your proportionate share of Eastern Lancaster School District's liability in PEASRs. And this doesn't affect your annual budget or what you budget for PEASRs because you have a set percentage. But I guess in terms of how I'm explaining it to the boards, it kind of gives you an idea of why your percentage is going up 20% on an annual basis. And I think the bleeding has gone from 25 to 29% to 30. So when we booked this liability, or the liability that was reported to us by PEASRs, they got audited and then gave a proportionate share of liability to all the school districts. And in the case of the Eastern Lancaster School District, the liability, your proportionate share of PEASRs was $57.5 million. So it kind of gives you a perspective of why these rates are going up so high and what you're paying in for. So I guess if you want to look at it, if you had to satisfy your PEASRs liability at the end of the year, you would kind of check the $57.5 million. Not that doesn't happen, but it just kind of gives you a perspective of why your percentage is going up on an annual basis, and making those front level statements. If you were a business, you would have it'd be a real liability. If somebody was evaluating how successful your business is, this liability would be. Any questions?
Just on that $57.5 million that they're assessing, that's for 1 year, or that's
what your unfunded actuary, it's not 1 year, it's just your unfunded actuarial liability. So, it's kind of like long-term debt,
For our past employees,
and existing
employees, what they're going to be owed.
Yeah, correct. So, that's what it's projecting out to be. So, the pension plan is in bad shape, and that's approximately, three times your retirement payable equals to. So that's consistent throughout the state three times, because it's just a portion of the millions and billions of dollars that are unfunded in PEASRs, and that's just your portion. So if you consider yourself a small district, some of the bigger districts are booking 200 $50 million of liability on our books for this. And finally, when everybody talks about, you know, when it comes to the board meetings, everybody wants to know what kind of audit opinion did we get, what's our general fund balance, and were there any findings. In the case of Eastern Lancaster, there were no findings for the year ended June 30, 2015. We also did a single audit, and for the current year, your single audit, your major program was the National School Lunch Program. There's different filing dates that the school district needs to comply with. Number one, Pennsylvania annual financial report was filed with the state by October 31st. Financial statements were posted to EMMA within 180 days or December 27th. And the single audit federal clearinghouse was filed on February 1st. That's only because the website was down and it was hacked. It was just up and running in January. So we posted that just a couple weeks ago. So like I said, you know, we've got 60 pages here. You know, there's other, I mean, time and effort it takes to put the 60 pages together isn't justified in this 5-minute presentation, but you know, it's a lot of work, excellent cooperation. You know, the whole process probably takes about 3 weeks or so, 2 weeks here, as long as we got to the office of the school. So.
Just clarifying the single audit, explain that to me.
So if an organization...
Is there like one thing that, they say that you have to audit this area this year?
If you're a school district or a nonprofit organization that receives in excess of $500,000, right, next year they actually raise the threshold to $750,000. So we take all your federal awards, we put them in a matrix kind of thing, depending on how recently you audit the award. Every award that's over $300,000 needs to be audited at least once every 2 years. So, and depending on if you have any findings, if you have findings in previous years, we obviously have to test more of your federal awards. So if I had a finding in the National School Lunch Program this year, I would have to audit it next year because it wouldn't be considered low risk. Does that make sense? So if I have a finding that's considered high risk, I would automatically have to audit that program in the next year. And any other programs that have been on basically within the last 2 years.
This would apply to like the lunch program, which we audited this year, and also like Title I.
Your big programs that we seem to rotate are Title I, IDEA, and the National School Lunch Program, your three big programs. Some of your smaller programs like Title II, Title III, that makes up about everything else, unless we consider something to be high risk in those programs. If we saw a problem during our audit procedures, we wouldn't necessarily test it otherwise. So those three other programs definitely test, because they're over the $300,000 threshold.
Questions?
Okay, hearing none. If you guys have any questions between now and when we vote on this February 22nd, feel free to send me an email. If I can't answer it, I'll forward it to Carl for his response. So, Carl, thank you so much.
Yeah, but like I said, no surprises in here.
This is pretty much what you focus on, schools?
Yeah, we actually audit 15 school districts.
Just make a comment about that, Mr. Yoder. Let's never take for granted that year after year we have a clean report. I've got to publicly acknowledge Keith Ramsey for that. That's unheard of. Carl can say, and he can explain it better than I, but we're very fortunate to have the financial board that we have. And I'm like too many things, you just assume that's going to happen, and it doesn't just happen. A lot of work that goes behind it, and both with Keith's direction, but also the personnel, the very few personnel that he has in his department to make that happen. And I know Carl has expressed to me that this is an enjoyable audit to do because things are so organized and people are so friendly and helpful. So that's a compliment to Keith, I just don't want to lose sight of that. That doesn't just happen. Just people make that happen. So thank you.
Yeah, I mean, not all 15 high school districts don't have a finding in their audit report, unfortunately. I don't like doing findings because it requires more work on my hand.
Yeah. All right, very good. Right,
thank
you for coming out and drive safely home. Thanks. Thanks. Did we have anything else, Mr. Ramsey, on the property
that's
services?
That's okay. It. That is my report.
Any other questions on anything regarding the property and services committee? All right, we'll move on to program.
Good evening. We have one item, action item on the agenda for next week, and that is an affidavit of guardianship. Any questions?
Thanks.
And that ends my report.
Thank you. All right, management and Dr. Hollison.
Thank you, President Yoder. A couple of items, just more information in nature. The first is regarding the free and reduced lunch numbers for the district. They're all in, and while the average is technically 39, basically 39%. I find it peculiar that our elementary average is actually 43.2%. We have continued to see this for years and years and years, that the percentages drop off respectively at the middle school and then the high school. I don't understand that because the families are the same families. So we continue to see that. So when I look at the free and reduced lunch population for the district, I consider the elementary averages as more accurate. So I do think we're about 43%. It should be noted that in the last 7 years, that has doubled. I mean, 7 years ago, we were at 21%. Wow. And we're now at 43%. And that has huge ramifications for education and learning and how we attack learning. Just for your reference, I'll give you these numbers real quick. Blue Ball is at 45%. Brecknock is at 40%, 40.5%. New Holland is at 44.2%. And then it drops off at 36.5% at Learnsville Middle, and then 33.3% at high school. But it's significant. And the organizations in town that help support our families are also noticing that too. The SSN, Cross Connections, the churches, they're all feeling that as well. But it has huge ramifications, particularly for our kindergarten. So that is why in the goals piece that I distributed electronically to you, you saw a lot of information regarding plans for pre-K and trying to prepare students for kindergarten. And we'll give you those updates along the way as we do that, but we're doing things like we had a pre-registration this year. We actually pre-registered kindergarten kids in the fall so that we could have continuous contact with them throughout the school year. We provide them with some free software that students can practice on before the formal registration this spring. We're going to be doing more of that. We actually have several nights where our teachers are going to sponsor activities to bring parents of pre-kindergarten kids into the school on site. And there's a whole litany of other plans that we're going to be addressing. Fortunately, the United Way has taken this cause on, this pre-K issue, because it's pretty much across the county where our folks are struggling. They have tried to do their best to create a common matrix that all schools could be compared to one another in terms of pre-K readiness. While that matrix is not perfect because of the sampling that they did for it, at the imperfect state, we're ranked very low in terms of the negative, meaning we have the larger group of students who are not ready for kindergarten comparative to other school districts in the county. So we have some work to do, but we also have some plans already in place and that we're working. So in the goal sheet that I shared with you as an information item, that is one area of a lot of attention, and that's why. Yes.
Question.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wanted to make a note for the program committee that I have been able to see my granddaughter receiving these pre-K. And it's great. It's, I mean, we're all having a good time with it, and they're going to attend next Tuesday night the event at the school. And so I'm excited to be able to see firsthand. And it looks really good, and my granddaughter's loving it. So.
Awesome.
Thank you.
We would love feedback for them, too, as a grandparent. Not so much a board member, but I would really love to see see how it plays out.
Yeah, no, I was impressed.
Cool, that's great. Well, compliments to Dr. Larkin and her staff. They have been on this. They know it. It's an issue. And it was, I think it was Melissa who indicated it's not just those academic skills. It's social skills and behavioral skills. And kids just don't know how to interact with one another or properly interact with adults. And all of that is putting a drain or is a drain on what we need to be doing in schools. It's a very difficult job kindergarten teachers have. No offense, Heather, but I think our kindergarten teachers really have a huge job, not that you don't. Heather works very well, is one of our best, by the way. But those kindergarten teachers have kids coming into them who, in some cases, can't do their letters, and then other kids are reading words, and they have to teach to that continuum. That is just a huge challenge, and our kindergarten teachers do really well, as our data supports. But if we could get that continuum to be a little bit smaller when they come in, I think you get even more bang for our buck from the effort that we're putting forth in the classrooms.
Do we see the percentage between free and reduced lunch? Did both of them go up the same percentage-wise, or has that gap changed, or do we measure that?
We did not measure that. We could probably go back. Are our kindergarten entrance testing, has it been consistent the last 7 years? So we can't do that comparison. It's a good question. It's a smart question, but we wouldn't be able to do that. One of the things that the United Way is trying to do is to make that a consistent metric, not only for school districts, but from school district to school district, so we can all compare to one another. Not that we want to say one's worse than the other, but to know where to put resources. And we have some more ideas for that. Okay. Moving along. Oh, hang on. I wanted to mention one other thing related to free and reduced lunch. Numbers. With the reauthorization now ESSA, Every Student Succeeds Act, come some changes from the federal government. One of those changes is going to be additional requirements for dipsticking who's on or who's appropriately on free and reduced lunches. We have to check a certain percentage now. That's going to go up. For us, it's not a huge deal, but for some school districts where they have 80%, that's a lot of work that's going to happen to verify folks' actual income, those kinds of things. So there are some changes coming to the free and reduced lunch numbers. I'm not sure that it will affect us. It'll be interesting to see if it in fact does. But we are going to have to put more effort forth to verify folks' free and reduced lunch status. Okay, moving along.
Just one quick question.
Sure, go ahead.
Do you think the difference between, especially high school and elementary, is that there are some students who are working jobs that they're counting that income in, or towards a family income?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know that the student's income weighs into that
I don't know
at
that's
all.
Measured either.
I'm
trying to figure out.
Yeah, I have
reason.
To. I mean, we've always speculated.
You've seen that all the time.
Yeah, we've always speculated that, and it's a speculation, that students at the upper levels are either embarrassed or just don't want their friends to know that because they have certain limitations on the food that they can choose and that kind of thing. And we've always speculated that. We've never really proven that. We've got a middle school principal here, and you probably shake his head to that, Jeff.
I've never seen that, but I've talked to other colleagues in other districts. Same phenomenon. The elementary is higher, middle
okay.
tier,
Okay, moving along. As you know, several years ago, we converted our driver's education class. Well, behind the wheel piece, we outsourced, and it's now privately done. That we've been doing that for about 8 years, 8 to 10 years. We also, about 5 years ago, 4 years ago now, put the classroom piece, took that out of the schedule as an option, and made that, too, something that parents could buy into. We have typically run that class in the summertime, but Mr. Stern came to me and offered some time in the winter. So we do have a winter session for the classroom experience, and we have 37 students signed up. As you also know, that we've sort of made that cost neutral and actually on the side of a revenue stream. We do clear a profit now with that, and we are charging $10 more this year. It's now $75 for the classes. If you also recall, a student participates in the classroom experience and then also does the behind the wheel piece, they can actually earn their driver's license with our behind the wheel instructor here, making it very convenient for families, and also see a significant reduction in their insurance for their child or student driver. So I'm pleased that we can offer that service to our kids here on site, and at the same time make a small profit on it. So Mr. Stern intends to offer our class again this summer, but he found himself free here in the winter time trying to catch a few extra kids.
When are they running that?
You know what? It's over the next couple of weeks. I don't have the exact dates.
But is it after school?
After school,
or Saturdays? Or?
After school. After school, yeah. So he won't catch athletes, but it'll be, he's got, we weren't going to run it if he didn't get enough students, but 37 was a good number of weeks. And that, what that also does is it helps our behind the wheel instructor keep a steadier flow of kids coming to her. Because what happens is she sometimes dries up until we get the classroom experience, and then she gets a rush. So it's actually helping everybody along the way by doing that. Any other comments or questions? It's a very nice service that we provide to our kids, keeping them sort of close. And they can drive roads they're familiar with, and they can test roads that they're familiar with, which is a real benefit for our students. Okay, moving along, just some other information. A lot of press right now related to the Sunshine Act and all the rules around that. Our solicitor has provided us very clear direction related to Sunshine Act. We know the rules. We know what we're supposed to do. So I'm very confident that we'll continue to use executive sessions appropriately if needed. We've got updated information just from the solicitor. Our solicitor firm last week, Cagle, Kellen, Olney, and Lord. And I feel very confident that we have clear direction about that. But if you have any questions, please do not hesitate to ask me, and I can direct those questions directly to the solicitor if need be. But I think we have a pretty good handle on the do's and don'ts of that. Board members, when you come on, you're given that orientation and reminded periodically. Are there any questions about that? Elanco Extra will go out. A new copy, I believe, is in your folders. They'll be hitting the streets very soon. I intend to highlight a couple pieces of that at our next board meeting. But we have some really exciting pieces in there related to what students are doing in the classrooms, and some pieces that you're already familiar with some faculty members who have received some honors recently. Somewhat related to that, if you didn't catch it, last week the Lancaster newspaper did a really nice piece on students signing for scholarships and colleges, and we had a really nice ceremony here. I think Mr. Reitnow really raised the bar on what he's doing with student athletes who sign. We had the most ever sign in 17 students at one time, and the most Division I students that we've ever had in five. So I'm really glad, I'm proud of the students and happy for their families. I'm also glad for Mr. Reitnow that in his final year and seeing some fruits of his labor pay off for kids. Had a really nice ceremony in the auditorium last week for our students.
I think we had something like 5 lacrosse students,
and
which is a real credit.
Absolutely. Our lacrosse folks have continued to hang in there to the point now where they have, I believe you're right, it was 5, 2-3 split with girls and boys. I'm not sure exactly what that was, but I was thrilled to see that they're earning something from all their efforts. So it's a good point, Mr. Yoder. One other thing related to the goal areas that I had shared with you, the Columbia Borough is pleased with the sharing that we're doing with technology and are anxious to continue to develop that partnership. So much so that they had significant struggles with technology, and we've managed to clean that up a lot for them. And they're now interested in looking at other partnerships and other administrative responsibilities that we could share with them. So it's really exciting that partner with another school district, eliminate some redundancies, and allow some of the professionals here to get a broader experience and a little bit bigger projects, if you will. So we're excited to have those conversations continue with Columbia Borough. And then the last thing I have, are there any questions about that? The last thing I had the pleasure of joining our students on Saturday morning over at Conestoga Valley Middle School. The Technology Student Association regional competition was taking place, and all 4 of our technology education teachers were there, including Captain Kufi, who's back in town from the middle school, and our students were competing. It's a former love of mine as a former teacher and board of directors member of 4TSA. It was nice to see old friends and see the students' projects. I know STEM is the latest buzzword in education. The Technology Student Association has been doing STEM since its inception, tying math, engineering, science, and technology together in a myriad of competitive events, and it was a great day. I haven't gotten results from our crew yet, but I assume I'll get them very soon. And that does, I believe, conclude my report at this time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions or comments from the management? And we need to, speaking of executive sessions, did we want to?
Yeah, I do need an executive session for personnel issue related to a specific incident that required disciplinary action. And another personnel issue related to the performance of a professional. So both are sort of professional performance related.
Okay. Very good. Any other announcements? If you could all sign your, just received them here, your ballot for the LCCT, turn those in to Mr. Johnson, would be great. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved. Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
We are adjourned. And Rodney.